Well, welcome on into QSO Live. And, of course, I'm Ted Randall, and I've got with me here, I've got David.
Good evening.
KG4WXW. And we've got a guest tonight here that's gonna probably blow your mind, okay? All right, we've got Eric Hoffer with us tonight, folks. KJ4YZI. Well, that kind of just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? YZI?
Really, yeah, it's really easy.
KJ4YZI. Well, that's a good call sign. Okay, he is the creator and proprietor, if you want to say proprietor, but he's a creator and whatnot of ham radio concepts. And that's I don't know how to describe it. He's, you know, it's not a podcast, but it's up on YouTube. So Eric, why don't you describe to us exactly how would you describe ham radio concepts?
Well, hello, Ted and everybody. Well, you know, I describe it like this. You never know what you're going to see. I'm in love with this hobby, and I like what I do. I like what we do, and I want to show that. I like teaching. So anything that interests me that I think interests somebody else, I try to make a video on it. And, you know, whether it be a new product, a lot of people are interested in new antennas or different radios or techniques on using these, I show it. And lately I've been trying to show a lot more than just product reviews, but that's how it originally started, was product reviews. I would like to see, you know, when the Bofeng radios came out, everybody wanted one. So I tried to show that and some other things, but there's so much in this hobby that I'd never come to an end and show everything because there's always something new coming out. So anything that's interesting, I try to show it. You never know what you're going to see on ham radio concepts.
Well, how do you go about, you know, getting your material? Because you don't have guests on there. There's no guests, so it's got to be, it's all you. I mean, you have to figure out what you're going to review and how you're going to do it. Now, you put a new podcast out, or a new video out, I guess I want to say, each week, is it not?
Well, there's really no schedule. I mean, it's, you know, I am a full-time working person, and it's a lot. You know, a lot of people may not know what creators online and people for this kind of stuff do. It takes a lot of time to edit these things. It takes a lot of time to brainstorm. I go to sleep thinking about this. I wake up in the morning thinking about this. I work all day thinking about this, try to maintain my full-time job and my family, and at the same time, come up with interesting content. Everybody, you know, you probably know, everybody nowadays is going to YouTube and the internet for stuff, and that's where they find a lot of my videos. You know, and a lot of times I fork up out of my pocket to buy some stuff. A lot of times there's some manufacturers or vendors that say, hey, we see you have quite an impact online, and you show these things to people. You know, can we send one of these to you? And you show it. And one thing you really don't see on there is a lot of negative. I don't really call myself reviews. A lot of people do review videos on things, but I don't really review it. I don't think it's fair to add my opinion to tell somebody that it is good or it's not. And I don't think that's fair to the manufacturer to tell everybody what I feel and if they should buy it or not. I simply show what it is. You know, this is what you can do with a radio like the 7300. This is what you can do with this. This is how you do this. This is what this will do. If it's something that's really not good or something that has had a flaw, I try to work that out with the manufacturer or the person that creates it. Or I just kind of really don't show it but too many things that have come up, you know, haven't come up that are bad. I mean, sometimes the Bofeng radios, you know, everybody knows about those Bofeng radios back in the day. I mean, they're cheap. They worked. A lot of people had them and they were viral for a long time. And sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't, but majority, I was just showing what it did, what it was. That's all.
In my way of thinking, that if they ship a radio to the United States and they don't put a pronunciation guide on the box, you can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I've been corrected several times.
You walk in the room and you say Bofeng. Oh, no, it's Bofeng. You know, Bofeng? Okay. You know, and I mean, yeah, you're always correct, but you know, the guy correcting you, he doesn't know any more than you do. You know, I mean, if you were to talk to somebody with the manufacturer, And I don't know who the manufacturer is of those things, but whoever it is, I'm sure they could give you, you know, they would give you the correct pronunciation of it. But,
well, the manufacturer did actually tell me years ago when I started this, because that's how this whole channel started, was with those radios. And at the time, they came out with the Baofeng, but then they also had Pofeng, P-O-F-U-N-G. And it was a big issue with the international market and the U.S. market. So
David,
they came out with Pofeng, and they said, this is Pofeng, you know, Baofeng, but whatever it is, you know.
Well, I'm just talking to my son here. Didn't you have a Pofeng?
I did. I still do.
Still have, it still operates and works and everything?
Still operates, still works.
Yeah, the one I had another radio similar to that was the forerunner to that. What was those things called? You remember? Matt bought me. Go ahead.
Was it you're saying it was before the Bofeng?
Yeah, I can't think of the name of the thing.
Well, they've had some like Ushan or Wuxan.
Yeah, yes, with a W.
Right, but that's actually, and again, that's actually pronounced Ocean, like ocean, is how the manufacturer told me.
No, other people
say it's, you know,
no,
Wuxan.
I'm sorry. It's got a W in the front, you know, so you have to work that W in somehow, you know, into the name. And you need to notify the manufacturer of this, too. Say, look, you know, it's we pronounce it with a W. Anyhow.
Yeah, I've got one of those, too, that still works.
Yeah, mine quit. Just gone, you know. But, I mean, at the price, who wants to fix it? I mean, you throw it in the trash can. Go buy another one. You know, that's...
I think I lost a charger for once. I just went and bought another one.
So, anyways, well, Eric, we've taken over here, and you haven't... We've cut you off, so you couldn't say anything about the... Yeah, I was calling it a Wuxan. That's what I was calling it. That's what I could not remember. But that's... You say the correct pronunciation is what now?
Well, they told me it's Ushan. Like, if you pronounce it O-O-S-H-U-N is how they said it was Ushan. But that's, you know, that's what the manufacturer said. Ushan, like ocean with a U. That's how they told me.
I was just wondering, how do you get that with a W in front? Okay. You know, foreign languages are different than English, and it's not the same. So I think they should do away with all the foreign languages. That would solve it, right? We're on shortwave radio covering the world, and, and I'm making crazy statements like that. Anyway, tell me something. When you've reviewed those, reviewed them, I guess you say you don't review, so... See, you've got us in a corner here. You're not a podcast. You don't review them. So what would be the proper...
It's an informational. I mean, I've actually run over your videos from time to time while I'm looking at stuff. And it is, it's somewhat of a, I don't want to say a, well, it is. It's pretty much a breath of fresh air because you're not hitting somebody who is... you know, talking down about the product. Basically, you were just telling me exactly what it is that was going on. I mean, you, I can't remember which video I was watching, but it was. It's nice not to get inundated with negative reviews because I've been up doing a lot of looking at how to do some woodworking stuff, and a ton of people just want to jabber on for 20 minutes about what's wrong with the product but not necessarily tell you how to use the product, you know, and that's what I've been looking for. And it's very nice with what you do, and you know, just talking about the product, not necessarily telling you everything you can't do with it.
And you know what you can do? You can buy that brand new ICOM 7300 from R&L Electronics. That's right, R&L Electronics. Or you can buy that brand new ICOM 7610. From R&L Electronics, or a new D-Star radio. I've been talking about R&L Electronics for a good while, and you've heard me go on and on about Roger and the crew at R&L. When you call there, you get answers. They answer the phone. The people answering the phone are knowledgeable folks. They carry everything. They've got transceivers. They've got antennas. They've got microphones. They've got coax, linear amplifiers, they've got antenna tuners. I mean, they've got everything ham radio. They're outfitted for the radio amateur. What a place to go. You'll love dealing with them because they're great people. You'll get great service. Everything will be shipped out promptly. There's nothing worse dealing with somebody that doesn't take your order seriously and you don't know whether or not it's going to get there on time. Believe me, I've been there. I've been there ordering ham gear. That does not happen with R&L Electronics. Roger and his folks care about you, and they care about the fraternity of ham radio. They want to keep you going. They want to keep it going. For the best price, the best possible price, and the best service and quality from individuals that know the amateur radio hobby and really care, remember the name R&L Electronics. Go up to the web, go to Google, and put in R&L Electronics. Contact them and go to their website, and you can't go wrong. Let me tell you a little bit about the ICOM IC7610. This is a high-performance RMDR receiver, transceiver. This thing will pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. And the 7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio, and it's going to change the world's definition. That's the ICOM 7610. Go to icomamerica.com/amateur. That's icomamerica.com/amateur. From Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, comes something revolutionary. It's the R-Finder K1DMR 4G LTE combination cell phone and DMR radio. That's right, all in one, one cell phone and a DMR radio, which will obviously operate analog as well, in one package. The cool thing about the DMR package is wherever you go, you turn the radio on and it just operates. You don't have to worry about a code plug anywhere you go in the world, and that's a fact. You should go up and check it out at rfinder.net. That's rfinder.net, this revolutionary combination cell phone and two-way radio with DMR. That's right. It's called the R-Finder K1 DMR 4G LTE cell phone. Go up and check it out at rfinder.net.
Right. Well, and you know, so informational would be good to say that. You know, I don't make my decision from when I look on YouTube for something. I don't make my decision off one person's. You know, I've bought many things, whether it be car parts or whatever it is, for people, you know, that recommend the product online. But I don't take their actual statement and say, well, no, this isn't what I want, because maybe they have a different feeling about it. That's why I say there's a lot of people on YouTube doing what I do. I'm not in competition. I hope we're all not in competition. We have our own way of doing it. And so I'm just throwing in my perspective, which seems to be quite effective, I guess, because I like to do this. So people see, wow, he's using it. This is what he's doing. This is what it looks like when he pushes buttons and touches this and operates. I mean, HF radios, I get on, make some contacts or whatever. And they get to see, wow, that could be me doing that. And that's what I envision myself doing, and they make a decision. So I'm not trying to make anybody's decision. I'm just showing them really what it is.
Well, you know, you're going to be – let me just say this. There's going to be folks out there that's going to perceive you as competition. Now, when we started QSO, and I've invited anybody and everybody, if you got a podcast, you want to get on the shortwave, you know, we don't – you know, or I'll have them on as a guest, you know. I mean, I don't care. I don't see what we do in competition with anyone. And there's been a few people that I've encountered that for some reason they felt like they were running a contest of some sort. You know, so I get out of the way. You know, I just don't. I don't want to get into that. We all should be promoting the fraternity of ham radio, and that's what we're here for, and that's what we do. And I don't see you as any kind of competition. I don't perceive that at all, because we don't think that way. But anyhow, let me ask you a question. Give me a rundown as to what caused you to start this, and how did you get started, and who were some of the the first items that you did information on?
Well, what started me with this, you know, I would go to people locally or forums, or when I first got my ticket about 14 years ago, you know, I go back, my 10th birthday present was a CB radio, and that was what really got me into this. But for many years, I was on CB, and I always, even from back then, we didn't have a lot of money. So I would ask people and my dad and stuff and say, hey, how could I make this go further? How could I modify this to work better? And my dad was the same mindset as me, but some other people locally when I first got my ticket or people on forums would always shoot me down. Oh, no, you're trying to do this and do that. Stuff, you know, just go spend the money and be done with it. Go buy this, end it, be done with it. And I didn't really like that answer because I wanted to experiment. I wanted to learn how to do stuff like that and how to, you know, I'm talking about, for instance, if I had a quarter wave antenna, I had to know how to make it a half wave because I didn't want to buy a half wave. And that's kind of the things that I would do. How do I make this radio sound like that? Well, you just go out and spend $4,000 on a big radio with an amp and a 5-element beam and be done with it. Well, I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it, you know, in a way that I could afford it and learn at the same time. Then I'll move to that part. So I guess when I started seeing some things about the radios, the Bofungs, which I originally started on, they would say, oh, it's junk. It's, you don't want that. Just go out and buy a $500, you know, other brand and be done with it. But that's not what I liked. I wanted to go out and show people, okay, if you want to buy one of these, this is what you're going to get. This is what you're going to do. And then it started brainstorming. Well, how do you program that, Eric? Okay, I'll make a video on programming it. And I'd show them, this is how you program it. Then someone would ask a question that they say was silly. They would be afraid. This is how they start it. Sorry for the stupid question. Please don't terrorize me and hate me in the response. That's how they started it. And then they'd say, how do I add to that antenna to get better range? Okay, that's a great question, a great idea, but we're not, you know, you don't want to do it this way. You don't just want to add wire to it because that'll change the SWR. And that starts a whole nother video. Why the antennas are a certain length to tune them for standing wave ratio for different frequencies. How does this work? And it's just it snowballed from there. And then eventually it was, okay, I upgraded to a wire dipole. How do you make a wire dipole? Well, let's show you. Why does it have to be this length? Well, I'll show you. And it just kept going on and on until the point where I was playing with other radios and newer things. And I mean, I go to sleep with it, I wake up with it, and the rest is history, I guess. I wanted people to have something to go look at that they didn't feel ashamed or scared or, you know, like a silly question. It's not a silly question. It's how we learn. And I've learned a lot from building and homebrewing things because I didn't have money. And that's how I learned a lot, by buying yard sale and ham fest radios that were broken or that didn't sound the best, but I learned why they didn't sound the best. And, you know, some things I shared on video, some things I didn't. But that's how I got to where I was. I had to know why. I had to know why it was, why it did, why it didn't, and not that I just have to. And that was really what I think people are rewarded with the answers in my videos. That's all I get, you know, a lot of comments. Wow, thank you so much. You answered all my questions, or, you know, this is great. And that's what's rewarding for me, is that come in. It's always usually somebody that's got something nice or positive to say, with the occasional hate mail, but that's what makes it rewarding to me, and that's why I really started it.
Well, why would somebody send you hate mail? I mean, you're just showing something. I mean, you're not, like you said, you're not reviewing it, you're not criticizing it, you're not bragging on it. So what would be their purpose in that?
I don't know. I mean, you think about it. When you make a video that's, I've had some videos that have had, you know, 500, 600 thumbs up buttons, and there's always two thumbs down. Two people either didn't like it, or they were jealous, or they hate me or something. I don't know. But how could you have a thumbs down on a video that just shows what something is? Or, you know, I get it. I can't do everything. I like to keep it simple too. So some people are looking for more advanced stuff, and I don't want to put my service monitor on a desk and get into that, because I don't feel that I'm that kind of qualified to give you results like that in laboratory form, which I don't have. So I keep it simple. And some people say, well, you just showed me what it did. You didn't give me any technical specs, so you didn't answer my questions. Well, I can't be anywhere, but I really don't want to put myself in that kind of, you know, well, I just like to keep it where they can understand it. And maybe some people want more from that.
Well, I mean, if a person is saying, well, you didn't give me the specs, I bet chances are they wouldn't even understand the specs if you gave it to them. One of the things that I'm finding, and, you know, I want to express this, and there's a lot of radio amateurs out there that they're very aloof, put themselves on a pedestal, they act as if they know more than they do, and they want to project themselves as an authority. I am a ham radio guy, I pass a test, I got a license, and, you know, you're dirt, okay? you don't measure up to me. And they overcomplicate things. Oh, my goodness. I mean, they really interest. David, join in on this. What do you think about this? They make things a far, far more complicated than what they really are.
They do.
You want my...
Always.
Yeah, you go ahead. You got...
I didn't know who you were directing that to. I didn't want to... You know, I have a thought on that, but I'll wait my turn, I guess.
No, I was just asking my son. I was asking him to chime in because... You know, we've experienced all kinds of things, you know, in ham radio. And there's the bulk of the people that are out there are great. The other night, it's been a little while ago, I had my grandson, Brian, who you'll hear on WTWW as a disc jockey. He's 14. He's quite remarkable. So he came in because my first experience in ham radio was in a shack. This guy's shack, his name was Nelson Cosby. I don't know what his call sign is. I continuously forget his call sign. But he lived in Dearborn, Michigan, and my mom's sister worked at the Ford Motor Company, and Mr. Cosby worked with them. And so I think they went to the same church, too, or something. Anyways, they decided to take me over there because I was on CB. Man, I had... I'll tell you the vintage of CB radios I've got, you probably wouldn't remember, okay, because you're probably not old enough. But, you know, I was fooling around with Citiphone SS radios, and I had a Knight 2590. I think it was an 8-channel transmit variable receive, you know. And I finally saved up the money and got the Citiphone. And it was built in Oak Park, Michigan at their plant. And the company is Multi-Elmac. They got out of CBs and went into some other stuff, like garage door openers or something along that line, you know. But I went to this man's house, and I watched him operate. He had a Heathkit Marauder and a Hallicrafters SX-101, and he had a Homebrew 813 amplifier. And I had purposed in my heart... As soon as I had a ham license, I was going to build an 813 amplifier, and I wound up doing that. But I heard him make a contact with a guy in Denver, Colorado, and he had a 5-element beam or a 4-element 20-meter beam on a tower, and of course the contact was just crystal clear. And I stood there and I was just looking at that, and I was in awe. I was thinking, this guy can talk to Denver all the time. He doesn't have to wait for, you know, the skip to roll in. So it really put the bug on me. So I know that demonstrating ham radio to a younger person is the power of, I guess I want to say, the evangelism of ham radio. So I had never done this before, but I got my grandson. I said, come on in here and sit down. And we got on the 80-meter band, and I jumped into three or four QSOs these guys are probably four or five on the frequency. And I just broke in and said, hey, I got my grandson here, and he's, you know, I want to show him how this ham radio stuff works. And so those guys went around and told where they were, gave signal reports. They all said hello to Brian, and I thanked them. And I went to another frequency, and I did the same thing, and they reacted the same way. So we went to three frequencies. We didn't have one person that sounded irritated. They all were very nice to us, you know, very cordial, okay? And yet, Brian, I think he went up to his room and he signed into Ham Test Online. What did it take him, David? 3 days?
Yeah, just almost, yeah. It didn't take him long at all. He was at it.
3 days. And he went and took the test, passed, and now he's got his technician. So now he's working on the general. But when he came in here the other night, and he's got a Bofeng Beifeng radio. It's one of the newer ones that's got the 220 on it. I think that was really ingenious when they incorporated that into that radio. But it's got the big battery and all that kind of stuff. It looks kind of cool. So he comes in, and there's a guy talking on the Lebanon repeater, and I said, hey, why don't you jump in there and say hello? And so he did. And, you know, it was his first contact. Well, they had a net coming up. So the guy that talked to him, he was kind of friendly to him and said, you know, tell your dad hi and all that kind of stuff. Your grandpa hi, and I'm sorry about that. He says, tell your grandpa hi, and I don't know. I think he may have said hello to Holly, too. I don't know. Anyways, but he kind of blew him off. He never said, well, hey, Brian, why don't you check into the net? We got a net coming up here. No, no. The net was coming up, and we're not going to talk to this kid. Okay? That was the attitude. And I know I'm going to make the guy mad by saying that, but I don't much care. Because young people, they need the encouragement. They don't need the curmudgeon ham radio operator. Now, their big concern, now get this, their big concern was a guy over in Smyrna, I believe it was, that was trying to check into the net by transmitting on the output of the repeater. And they were just going crazy trying to get this guy. But let me tell you about their net. They had one check-in. One check-in for the ARES net. And some time ago, Holly went to go get license plates for the vehicle, and we have the emergency ham radio call sign plates. So she goes to get that renewed. And the gal at the I don't know, I guess that would be Department of State.
I believe so.
Anyway, she says to Holly, hey, if you're a member of ARES, you can get a discount on your plates. So Holly, she got the plates and came home, and she says, well, what about ARES? I mean, she had heard of it, but she didn't, you know, can we join? Is there something we can do? And I said, I believe so. I said, let's get the application. So she had to hunt high and low to try to get one locally. And I'm telling you, these folks here are a piece of work. She got the thing filled out, and then in return, there came a letter that contained statements like, if you don't plan on attending all the meetings and participating, we don't want you. And if you're joining ARES just to get a discount on your license plates, we don't want you. Well, we already had the license plates, so that wasn't a problem, but they really made an issue of that. And then later on, one of the ARRL officials here in this area, when I talked about it on the radio, just like I talked about it now, he said, if you say that again on the radio, I'm going to sue you. Jump me in a ham, ham, ham. And I think it's good what you're doing, because you're taking things that come in, like, I mean, equipment. I watched your video on the Octopus antenna from MFJ. And I think you did a fantastic job of demonstrating that thing, because I was a little curious. You answered all of my questions in this video. And I talked to Richard, and I talked to Martin Jew, and I said, man, this guy really did a good job on this Octopus, because we're giving one away, and I was wanting to know all about it, you know. And you answered all my questions. So I think it's good when you got somebody that's concentrating on the matter at hand and making it simple and easy for everyone to understand. And that's what we try to do here. We try to do the same thing with anything we're doing. So I admire that, and I applaud you for it, because I think it's just a good thing. We don't want to make ham radio more complicated than what it is. We don't want to make it sound all official, you know, like, and man, that's the stuff that burns me, is this, everybody's an official, you know. Okay, so anyways, you can see I have a difficult time expressing my opinion. If you just tuned in, this guy may hang up on me here. We're talking to Eric Hoffer, and he is KJ4YZI, and he is the proprietor and creator of Ham Radio Concepts, which is a whole series of videos that you can find up on YouTube that Boy, all kinds of subjects. Tell us a little bit about the different things that are up there.
Folks, I want to talk to you for just a minute about the main trading company. The proprietor, Richard Lenore, a ham radio guy through and through. His whole life is ham radio. He's the guy that started the Ham Fest in Paris, Texas. And now, of course, he's the proprietor of... If you go up to the website, you're going to see amateur radio. You're going to see new open box demos. You're going to see connectors and adapters. And you're going to see educational toys and FRS, GMRS. You're going to see radio accessories. You're going to see package deals. I mean, it's all up here. It's too numerous to mention. He's got radios. Of course, he carries Elenco, Kenwood, ICOM, Yaesu, MFJ. He's got all of Martin Jew's products over there at the MFJ. You can order anything you want to. The best prices. There is just no way you can beat them. The main trading company, especially if you're west of the Mississippi near Paris, Texas, you need to buy from Richard Lenore, KA5DX, the main trading company. And it says here, free U.S. shipping on most orders over $100. You know, go up to their website, the main trading company. Go up there and just Google them. If you can't find the website, Google them. Once again, they're in Paris, Texas. But they've got everything you could possibly want. And just to name a few things, they've got wires and cables and antennas and amplifiers and antenna tuners and radios and handhelds and VHF, UHF, the whole deal. And if you're confused and you've got questions, pick up the phone and call and talk to Richard Lenore. You can't go wrong. These are people that you'll love to deal with. You'll make friends for life. The main trading company in Paris, Texas. That's where you need to go.
You know, there are very few hobbies that can stick around for a century. But amateur radio is one of the growing survivors, with about 3 million currently active hams worldwide. Most of us know about the public service aspect of our hobby and how we can help neighbors by providing emergency communications. It works when nothing else does. But there's more to it than that. Hams are part of a worldwide community that spread goodwill with some of the nicest, smartest, and most interesting people that you'll ever meet. Of course, you know, it's easy to interest people in ham radio, but then there's that pesky test. And for many, that's a big stop sign. Those technical questions might as well be a foreign language to a newcomer. And frankly, a lot of the teaching tools aren't very good. But now, thankfully, there's a game changer. It's called Ham Test Online, and it turns the gobbledygook into something that's pretty easy to understand, and that makes getting licensed really easy. And not only is it inexpensive, but it comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. You get your ticket, or you get your money back. And in a recent independent study of new hams, 97% gave Ham Test Online 5 stars. So, if you've been putting off getting your license, no problem. Maybe you're a technician wanting to upgrade to general or extra. No problem. Try it right now. The first 50 questions are free. Your success is guaranteed. Try it out right now. www.hamtestonline.com. That's www.hamtestonline.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Okay, well, yeah, I have a couple things to add to what you just went through. I keep all that in my head. See, I don't script anything, so I don't ever write anything down. I do all this on the top of my head. I don't script anything, so I take what I hear from you or what I'm doing on video, and I don't script anything, so it's all in my head. We can go back to that in a second, but on the videos on the channel, you know, I'll give you a couple of examples if you haven't seen them. You know, there's been videos where I show, you know, how to send email from an ICOM 7100 or how to send email over APRS, how to use APRS, how to send pictures, how to work a contest on HF, what you do at field day, what happens at Hamfest, you know, things like this in between with the videos of product reviews, like I keep saying reviews, but you know, like the MFJ Octopus or the 7300 I awarded myself with after 10 years. Just there's really no organized stream. A lot of people like to have a stream on episode. This is episode 16, and we're talking about this. I really don't do it that way. If I come home from work one day and I was thinking about something, you know, maybe someone needs to know how to do this or how to do that. You have, I guess, a couple different ways to go in the hobby. There's a lot of people that think, and this is true, amateur radio has always pulled us out of every natural disaster. You know, when hurricanes come, amateur radio is there. Amateur radio saves lives. Amateur radio is there when everything else fails. That's a big thing of our hobby. But we're not always in a zombie apocalypse. We're not always going to have a volcano that ends the world. So it's a hobby. Let's have fun with it. Why not be able to send pictures to somebody else or bounce a signal off the moon or send a packet to the space station on APRS or 2-meter packet? Internet wiped that out, but I still enjoy sending emails on 2-meter RF, VHF, 144 megahertz. I like doing that kind of stuff because it's just fun to do it and people learn from it. But in the event of a natural disaster, yes, ham radio is there. But a lot of people treat it like, I got my go kit and I got all this and I'm ready for the zombies to come knocking at the door. That may never happen. But if it does, I mean, a lot of people, you know, there's preppers that watch my channel. There's, you know, doomsday preppers. There's enthusiasts. There's hams. There's mostly a lot of the hams that watch my channel are sort of new to the hobby. There are some seasoned professionals that have been doing this before I was even thought of that are still commenting and said, Eric, look, I've been doing ham radio 55 years. And you've taught me in the last 4 videos a lot that I didn't even know. And it's rewarding and refreshing to keep this hobby active and alive. And that's rewarding to myself. But as you said before, there are some, to go back to what you talked about a little bit ago, there are some folk in ham radio that are just upset with the fact that someone like me would do it simple. An example, you know, would be, like you said, they want to make it so over confusing for everybody. I was at Dayton Hamfest and I was helping a vendor out for a few days a couple years ago. They asked me to come up there and help. I volunteered my time to be at Dayton and to help them sell some things and discuss it with the customers that were interested. And one customer came up and he was obviously doing radio a long time. And he came up and he started talking with me and he's, you know, asked me a couple questions and then he said, okay, now I'm going to ask you a real question. I want you to tell me, and I can't recite this because I don't know what he was talking about, honestly. I don't know everything. And he says, you know, the third order of the 10 megahertz flip-flop, something or other. And he said, I want you to tell me what that frequency is in that device. And I said, well, sir, honestly, I can't answer that, but I can, you know, maybe find somebody that would help me out with your answer. He said, no, I don't want you to find anybody. I want you to tell me why I shouldn't sit here and tell everybody that you're nothing more than an appliance operator. I said, okay, now wait a second. I said, the question you're asking me,
Why did you dignify the guy with even answering?
Well, you know, I don't really get mad, and I didn't want to come up with a defense, but I was more intrigued to find out why he thinks that I must know what that device or what that string of sentence and complicated words that I don't know as a ham. I wanted to know why he wanted to know about that. And there's other people listening, and now we have a little crowd. And he's calling me out and he says, I want you to tell me. He says, you're nothing more than an appliance operator. You can't answer that. And I said, but all these people that are interested in this radio are fully capable of operating that radio without knowing that level of dynamic to that, which maybe only the manufacturer knows. And he says, but you're out here selling things to people and you don't even know how it works. And at that point I said, okay, well, you know, I can't answer the question, but and a lot of people were siding with me. They said, Eric, you know, they never met me, but they were standing there. And they said, you know, I don't understand what he was asking either, but it sounds like he hasn't come up with the answer yet either. And that's why he's finding, you know, trying to find out the answer from someone else, because I'm not sure he knows what he's asking. But the moral of the story is, you know, I don't see why we had to, you know, come to that point and you know, ask that. Yeah, I would have loved to know the answer to the question and know what he was talking about. But if you do that to new hams, you're going to scare them away because some people don't care about that or they're fully capable of getting on, talking across the world, making contacts, building antennas, and operating in a very professional or casual fashion, but they have no idea the answer to that gentleman's question. But if you do that to newcomers, and I've seen it before, you know, it scares them away and you never hear them on repeaters again. They didn't even progress to a general because they got scared away from the attitude on technicians. So that's just my opinion on going back what you were talking about. And that happens, you know.
Well, you know, right here in Lebanon, Tennessee, where we live, which is just outside of Nashville. And my son David is sitting here. He'll tell you, we have been on the 2 meter repeater here locally. Just get on and start talking, and some guy will come on and say, "Listen, you guys need to take this to Simplex because we like to reserve the repeater for out of town traffic." And so I'm a smart, you know what? And I said, you know, well, hey, I'm originally from Detroit. Does that count? You know, I don't know. It used to bother me. A lot of people get offended. That's the problem that we've got. You know, somebody like you and I just come back to them and tell them something. I mean, I just tell them, you know, I let them have it, you know. And, yeah. And you know, the thing of it is that there shouldn't be confrontations on ham radio. There shouldn't be anybody condescending to somebody else, you know, and that's the part about it, I think, for a newbie, somebody that just comes into the fold, so to speak. It'll run them off, you know, and I think for the most part, the people that do that feel very satisfied with themselves when they do run somebody off. I mean, that's, I don't know. David.
Well, there are some that, I don't know how this is going to come across, but I don't ever show myself with all this, you know, that you get the guy that has to show on his QSL card that he's got 19 amplifiers and you know, 8 acres of antennas, and they do it in videos sometimes on the internet, and they, you know, I am here, and this is my, and they name their property after their radio station call sign and all that, and I'm just a guy like anybody else on the radio, and I think that makes people feel more comfortable. I'm just here on a desk, and I have a radio on my desk. That's it. But some people feel that the more radios you have and the more, you know, knowledge you have, you're better than someone else, and I think that scares people off. So that was my comment on that. I'm just another guy out there doing it with others that are watching and helping new people and giving them confidence that you don't have to have all this elaborate stuff and act like you know it all to be a radio operator. You know, over to you, David.
Yeah, the elaborate stuff comes afterwards. You know, everybody starts with a something. You know, a $50 radio that they picked up at a swap meet somewhere, or you know, you got to get the dust off the thing, or you know, you end up with a small HT that you pick up. You're like, okay, let me try this. You know, we all start somewhere. You know, we started counting some of the radios that I had, and unfortunately, I was trying to get a 2 meter rig in my truck, and I found out that I had like 3 broken 2 meter rigs. Need to send those back in to get repaired. But you know, you don't start getting your collection for a while. You know, and to the people that are pain in the butts, you know, I've run into them all over the place.
The other thing, too, you have broken radios. You're going to send them in, you know?
Yeah.
It used to be that we'd fix our own stuff. But you open up one of those things, I can't even see good enough to work on one. You know, and then I haven't got the slightest idea what I'm looking at. You know, I mean, it's not like...
No, don't get me wrong.
Years ago. But now look at nobody out there, for the most part, has that kind of ability or knowledge anymore. The technology has risen to a height that exceeds. You know, I've got little Drake radios here, and I can work on those just fine, all mm-hmm. right? But they got tubes in them, and there's a lot of room. You turn them upside down, and you can get right in there where the components are and everything. They're pretty easy to service, but, man, I wouldn't even think of opening up the case on our 7610, and I don't think you would, David.
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't want to open up the case on your 7300.
No.
And you know, it's like the technology has risen above the level of the average ham. So yes, we are appliance operators to some degree. And if you can't admit that, then you know what you can do. We are appliance operators, and that's because of the level of technology that we've got. Now there are probably maybe some geniuses out there that can pop the lid on a radio and work on all this surface mount stuff, and I admire that. I really do. But that's not the majority of us. Not anymore. It used to be, but not today. Unless you're,
you know what, I would have got licensed and been born in a time when you guys had to build your own stuff, because I would be so much farther. You know, I missed the whole, I'm just now trying to get into older tube CBs and tube amplifiers and buying broken stuff just to see and figure it out. And because I wish I was back in that day, that would have been so much more fun. Now you have to buy a radio, you know, like you said, a SDR or solid state radio or whatever. And you have to, it's when it's broke, you got to have the whole PA assembly installed, and they charge you X amount of dollars because you can't repair it. And I wish I was from back in that day, you know?
Well, you know, I guess, you know, there's pros and cons with that. You know, if you can't work on the radio, you can focus on the antenna, or you can focus on an amplifier, or something along that line. Antenna tuner. You know, there's a whole, you know, that's a very physical thing right there. Working on building and experimenting with antennas is a physical thing. You use your hands and, you know, an MFJ antenna analyzer. You know, and you know, you can do real well with it, but I'm to the point now where I believe that let's see here, I'm to the point now where I believe that you can't you know, you can't do that anymore, but you can build projects. My goodness gracious, look at Joe, the kit guy. And what's his call sign? Something NEB, K0NEB?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, you know, and he's, you know, he's wild about kits, and he's good at it. And I think, and there's a lot of people that build stuff from scratch. You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys who go through old QST magazines, and they build things up. So there's plenty to do. You know, you don't have to stick your fingers into something you don't understand. And but I believe where I would have to say the majority of hams today are indeed appliance operators. So this guy comes up to you and says this, he's out of his mind. Okay, I'd walk up to him and spin him around a few times and say, walk. You know, yeah. But that's the same kind of guy by the same token who is going to disillusion another ham. Now, you can't tell me that him rattling your cage like that didn't bring a certain amount of disillusionment. In other words, it's kind of like, man, why am I doing this? You know, I'm putting my time and effort into this. I don't get paid for it. And, you know, this just doesn't make any sense.
And the questions from everybody that were interested were, you know, because it was a pricey product, and they said, you know, tell me about this. They didn't want to know all those technical things. They want to know what it does. How could they use it? What are advantages over that one? Why should they come here and get this one over that one? And you know, give them basic stuff. And that made a smile on their face. But if I would have said, if I would have known enough to go into that kind of technical detail, I would have scared them off. And they wouldn't have, they was, oh yeah, no, I'll just stick with a regular HF radio, you know? They wouldn't have went to that extent. So I guess he was just looking for an answer, and I couldn't provide it. But I mean, there's no, you know, there's people like that are also on the air and comments and YouTube and stuff. You know, that you can't please everybody. For the most part, I have a lot of, you know, I mean, in the last month, I've gotten about 4,700 thumbs up and about 70 thumbs down. That's a pretty good ratio for people that volunteer their time to click that button and say that they liked the effort of the video. But the 70 thumbs down, maybe they weren't interested in what I did or they hated the way I did it. But, you know, it's a pretty good ratio. You can't please everybody, you know?
No, you cannot. And you're always going to have that one or two people, you know.
They gave you the thumbs down because you didn't use a lock washer.
Let me give you an example. This works the same way. We kind of connected up with John and Christina Cunningham, the folks that do Ham Test Online. Not only are they good people, but I think they have an outstanding product. It's like my grandson went upstairs into his room and studied for 3 evenings and passed the test. Now, excuse me. No, I don't have a cough button. I'm vulnerable. I'm vulnerable here. What I found that was, to me, was discouraging was the fact that a lot of the study guides even Like, there's a study guide. I don't know if the ARRL puts it out or not. I don't know. One of the tests, I think it was a technician test, where they start talking about Coulombs. Okay? I mean, in my entire life, and I'm a radio engineer. I work at radio stations with transmitters and stuff, and then we work on their big shortwave here. I've never once even considered a Coulomb for anything. I've never gone to a fast food store.
I've never even heard of that.
Say, give me a couple of Coulombs with mustard, okay? Just, it's just not part of it, but we've got to stick it in there because we've got to make it look hard. And that's because we're real important. So anyways, somebody's got to come around here in a little bit and just, pulverize me here for being so outspoken. But I think it's important. You know, you're talking about videos that you're cutting that deal with subject material that people want to learn. Okay, so maybe what you're doing is just level one. That's fine, because they need an introduction. They need somebody to sort it out and put it all on the table. The thing that have not seen your stuff up on the web, I think a lot of them would like to know, though, because that's why I ask you, the different subjects that you have up there, different things that you cover, products, processes, or whatever. I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about that so they know. I want them to visit your videos.
Can I be specific on brands and stuff? Or can I
oh,
say
no,
that,
you
or?
Sure. Absolutely. Go to town. You know,
well,
that's why we're here.
Okay, so going back a second and talking, I think David had mentioned, you start slow and go big. So I have it. When I was in the hobby, I had a FT450 ASU, and that was my first HF radio that I got in a deal from my Elmer, KI4LUY, Patrick. He got me, we were CB buddies back in the day, and he turned me on to a 2-meter repeater, and the rest is history. But I dealt with that radio for 10 years and then moved up into a 7300. I wanted to wear that thing out until I got absolutely bored with it. So one of the things that he taught me that was the best thing I've ever said, I preach all the time, the Christmas presents are always better when they're wrapped under the tree. I would sit there with him with catalogs and look at all this stuff. God, I got to have that handheld. I got to have it. Can you imagine having this HF radio? But sometimes when I buy it, I lose interest right away. So a good story for that is one of the recent handhelds I got was the Yaesu FT2DR. So I've had that three times now. I got it once. I had to have it. I sold stuff, had to have it. I got it. I used it a couple times. I got bored real quick. It sat there. I sold it. 2 months later, I had to have it again. I figured, well, I'll make a video on it again. I got some ideas. I got it. I got bored. Other things came up, and I sold it. And this is the third time I bought it, and I have to keep it now because I've already done this three times. But, then I figured, well, I've already showed the video once on what kind of – it's not just a handheld. It does a lot of stuff. You could send pictures with it. You can – I went through – recently I did like 3 or 4 videos on it, how to use APRS on it, and then how to do email over APRS, and then how to do – WinLink to APRS or APRS link to, show how to do that from that handheld. And you could do that from a lot of different handhelds, but that's what I had in my hand at the time. And so that was, APRS and WinLink and VHF email and sending email over radio waves. Now, that may not interest everybody. So then the next thing I'll do is I'll jump to something like my 7100. Okay, now I'm going to show you how to do D-Star on HF and how to do and what the 7100 is like. So then you get a whole different group of commenters, a whole different group of people that are interested in HF only, or that are interested in VHF only, or that are interested in packet or D-Star or Fusion. You got guys that'll use D-Star that'll never touch DMR. And so I'm all over the place. I've had reviews on handhelds for DMR. I have a DMR digital smartphone that's got Android and a 4-watt transmitter in it. So I could be on radio with my cell phone, and I've had a couple of those. And that interests a certain type of people. But then the people that doesn't interest that, they may like the video I just did, which I got a great response in one day on CB radio. Now, can you imagine? We've just talked about we were both on CB radio before ham radio. And I did a complete video. I have some stuff tucked away in the closet. I've got things that I probably shouldn't have for CB and all this. But I figured, you know what? this is the way that people can get started into radio. I could, you know, there's people out there, whether we like it or not, that are never going to be in ham radio, but they may get into CB. Or they may get into CB radio and be hooked and want to go even further, like myself. And that steps them into HF and ham radio. But when they get into ham radio, they'll already have their feet wet on some radio propagation, how the bands work, how to increase your power or your gain of your antenna, or how to build a CB antenna. And a lot of people would always tell me on for years, oh, that's the chicken band. Oh, that's the truck driver's band. I got news for you, and I'm going to push another video out tomorrow. There's more action right now on CB, sadly, than there is on 10 meters and 6 meters and 12 meters, because people think that there's nothing going on. But these guys on CB are shooting skip, as they call it, all over the United States and parts of the world, and they're having a blast with it. So I don't take that from them. I join them and have fun with them, even though it's not a licensed band. But there's a lot of stuff in that video on CB radio, and I posted it 22 hours ago, and I've already got 3,500 views on it and 100 comments in less than 24 hours. And all of them are hams that are like, good job, Eric. I was on CB when I was a kid, and that got me into ham radio. And that's the kind of stuff that I like, because – I didn't get torn apart in that video with the comments. Everybody, like, agreed with it. Of course, a couple thumbs down. But, you know, I go all over the place. A handheld radio, an HF radio. I need to do some more stuff on building HF antennas, because I've built all of them until I finally afforded a good vertical. I got a high-gain 9-band vertical. But I built all my antennas because I didn't have the money to do it. And quite frankly, the wife says I don't have the money to go blow it on this hobby anyways, because it can get expensive if you want to sink money into everything. So I still like to try to build antennas or interfaces, and I'm a junkie for making my own interface cables to connect from the radio to the computer for cat control. I don't like buying $40 cables. I like to cut apart cables, solder them, and electrical tape them together. That's just the way I do it. And then one down the road when they fail and I really want one, I'll buy a pre-made cable. But, videos like that. Hey, I made this interface. Let me show you how I did it. Hey, this is my 7300 I just got, and I'm going to show you how the bands are today. And I get on there and work HF and, you know, tell everybody, look, the bands aren't dead. You just got to get out there and call CQ. And people like that. And then they get encouraged to fire the radio up and turn it on. And the older videos way back in the day may have been reviews, as you call it, or I call it, on older or, you know, Chinese handhelds or whatever. But I've since moved on from that. I've got a lot of ICOM and Yaesu stuff here. And I have a lot of material that I can make without even having to go back to the Chinese radios. Nothing wrong with them. Everybody had one, and they're great for new techs. But I've just kind of moved on because I got so many things I can make videos on. But you can see right there, I've spanned from Yaesu Fusion to D-Star to HF to email over RF to CB radios. I mean, in just 5 examples out of 280 videos that I have on there.
Well, let me ask you a question. What is it that you have that you think is inappropriate that would apply to Citizens Band?
The best tasting coffee in the entire world comes from a blind coffee roaster who's been blind from birth, Jerry Leary. His company is The Unseen Bean. Go to his website, theunseenbean.com. You'll be glad you did. Try his kilowatt blend or his contester's blend. TheUnseenBean.com.
The ICOM 7300. And now this is a contester's dream. It's a high-performance HF transceiver with a compact design. It doesn't miss a weak signal under any circumstances. And it's got the waterfall function and the real-time spectrum scope. Man, it's exactly what you need if you're a contester. ICOM has the reputation of being incredible in the performance and also the service they provide to you. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. That's ICOMAmerica.com/amateur.
We've got some news for you folks that live in antenna-restricted areas. You know what I'm talking about. And if it's not an HOA, it's a bunch of nosy neighbors. Well, listen, we've got some news for you. It's a new antenna. It's called the Cobweb. That's right, the Cobweb. And this thing is made by MFJ. It's incredible because it's 10 through 20 meters in all the bands in between.
And it goes up real easy, and guess what? It disappears. It's got a very low takeoff angle. It's an excellent antenna. You have all kinds of fun with this thing. It's called the Cobweb. Go to the MFJ website. Just Google MFJ and Google MFJ Cobweb. Go up and take a look at this. You won't believe what you see, and you know once you see it, you're going to have one. It's the Cobweb from MFJ. One of the best kept secrets in ham radio is an online publication called the Spectrum Monitor. Have you ever heard of it? Well, if not, you need to go to their website, thespectrummonitor.com. That's thespectrummonitor.com. Each month, all kinds of pertinent articles pertaining to ham radio, shortwave, citizens band, scanning, Wi-Fi, you name it, it's in there. Color pictures, incredible writers writing these articles. You just have to check it out. You need to subscribe. Go to thespectrummonitor.com. Once again, the website is thespectrummonitor.com. Give it a look over and subscribe. thespectrummonitor.com. You might remember a year ago when we went out and did a broadcast from Area 51. We were out in the middle of nowhere near a pile of rocks right up against the fence. And we could see the camo dudes and they could see us. There's no internet out there, no cell phone service. There is nothing. So how did we do it? We did it with a company called Seacom. They brought out the iNetView system on a truck, or on a van, I should say. It's press one button and connect in 2 minutes and flat. That's exactly what it does. If you need the internet where there is no internet for business purposes of any kind, remember the name Seacom. Their web address, www.c-comsat.com. www.c-comsat.com. That's Seacom. And ask for Jim Ferris.
What do you mean?
Well, you said you had said something earlier that you had some, you know, inappropriate stuff, and I was just curious what it was.
Let me just say, when I was
a young person, very young, I used to work on DNA linear amplifiers. I think they were made in maybe what, Scottsbluff, Nebraska. I can't remember where they were, but DNA had the Hornet, this little one, and then they had the Raider, which had four sweep tubes in it. Then they had the Maverick, which had, I think, six or eight sweep tubes in it. And then they had the Phantom that had 12, I think it was, 12 sweep tubes. And it would put out, you know, key down, you'd probably get 600 watts out of that thing, you know. So I used to repair them and work on them and had a lot of fun doing it. Learned an awful lot about, you know, grounded grid linear amplifiers. But anyways, I was just, what kind of contraband you had in your house?
Well, yeah, after you make it sound like that, it's really not contraband. But I mean, as a FCC licensed operator, yes, a CB limited to 4 watts. But you know, I was saying, is anybody regulating it? Probably not. And you know, I don't think they're really hurting anybody. But I got a few amps, you know, a couple 300, 400, 500, 600 watt amps in the I haven't used them in a while. But I've had a lot. I haven't had too many tube amps. I do have one in the closet. It's good for, you know, 150, 175 watts. But, you know, when I used that, actually, I did use that amp on 10 meter AM, and nobody really knew, and I had it low drive. But I used that because, I guess, back in the day, that wasn't really a CB amp. It was more of a CW amp, as you call it. I don't know. But I was working some 10 meter AM with it, and I haven't used it since. But 10 meter AM, I was working the same guys in Greenland and Scotland every day with 100-something watts, And you know, my radio only put out 25 watts in AM. But I got a couple of Texas Stars and a couple other things in there that, you know, people are using them. It's out there. Nobody's really caring or regulating. And, you know, I thought I'd for sure people would yell at me and say, you're a ham. You shouldn't be exceeding the 4-watt legal limit for CB. But, you know, I guess it is. I'm human. It is what it is. People are doing it. They're all over eBay. eBay's allowed them to be sold now. They used to pull them off in 2005 and 6. Now you can buy them on there as CB amplifiers. So I figured if eBay is going to change their policy, why not? You know, I used to have
authorize hams to operate on the Citizens Band. Why not? Why not? See, and another thing, too, is if you go on and you're signing your call sign, you know, instead of coming in with a handle, or you may want to sign your call sign, then use a handle. But either way, to me, it seems to make sense, because if you have hams operating there in 11-meter band, talking to CBers back and forth, those CBers have then got a real good connection to the amateur radio hobby fraternity, and you know what? You're gonna entice a whole lot of them in, because when they learn, maybe, you know, you observe the 5 watts in, 4 watts out, or whatever it is, to the final, you know, I mean, but you're able to talk to them, you know, and they're able to talk to you, and I think that would be really cool. I could see somebody, you know, going as far as, you know, teaching a class over citizens band radio in a town, you know, or group discussions like that. That used to be real active when I was a young person, but I've noticed here in Lebanon, boy, there's just hardly anybody on. You know, I'd get on, you know, you always hear somebody on Channel 19. I mean, that's just a given. I mean, I live right near I-40, so I hear those guys. And unfortunately, the range is not real good. I've noticed that something's happened, because when I was a kid, heck, we talked 20, 30 miles on a citizens band radio. It doesn't seem possible now. I mean, I hear these truckers come through here, and they're here. And I mean, when they start to get about 5 miles out, man, they just drop right out of sight. So I don't know what that's all about. But the worst case scenario is 2 meters. It's dead as a nail. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can travel, and we did. We traveled from Nashville to Detroit, not make one single contact, okay? Nobody home. Trying, you know, all these repeaters, and you just couldn't find anybody. I thought, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. I mean,
that's videos coming up here any day, because I have... You know, I love 2 meter sideband and AM, and, you know, people, a lot of the newer guys think 2 meters is a repeater with a handheld, but you could do CW, you can do moon bounce, you could do packet, you could do sideband AM. And I guess before my time, that's what 2 meters was AM before they had sideband rigs. And so like you said, yeah, it's dead right now. I have a bumper sticker on my vehicle, and it says around there, monitoring 14652. And I always listen to Simplex on one side of the radio and a repeater or my hotspot on the other, and I never hear anybody on there. And like you said, that's dead as a doornail. And UHF is even worse than that. But there's still some people that are trying, you know, to keep UHF sideband nets alive in case, you know. I mean, we're coming into that time now in Florida. I think next month, February, I'll start having some band openings here again. And hopefully on sideband, I could work up into, you know, Carolinas on 2 meters like I've done before. And then when someone sees that in the video, they say, wow, I can do that on 2 meters? Sure, you have to have a beam and, you know, a rotator, you know, swing it around or whatever. But, yeah, you can do that. It's not just FM, but I guess, like you said, if you want my honest opinion, 10 meters, 2 meters, 6 meters UHF, 11 meter CB is the most active of all those. And that's not a problem. It's just, today all day long, I was scrolling around, just playing around, and CB was just booming. I counted 15, 20 states. And if you're tuned in, you can see the video coming up tomorrow. You listen to all the guys on there. It's just, I think lack of Elmering and lack of people advising what you can do and getting people out there on there, just like to 2 meter analog repeaters. If you're, I'm not sure, Ted, if you're into D-Star and all that stuff, but everybody's migrated to digital, and all the 2 meter analog repeaters that we've met everybody on, this is where I got my license and met all the locals on the analog machine. They're sitting there dormant and nobody's on there anymore. Then you get the new guy, gets his license. He tunes into the local 2 meter repeater. There's nobody there. So, that's you know, then he tells his buddy, oh, there's nobody on 2 meters, might as well not get on there, and then goes from there and there, and pretty soon they'll take the band from us, maybe. I don't know, because there's not a lot of action on there.
Well, I guess my question is do they the people okay, D-Star is active, okay, very, from what I understand, and DMR is active, and I guess there's another system called Fusion that Yaesu has. Anyhow, how much activity is there? Somebody's a new ham, if they get a radio that's got DMR on it, or if they if it has a D-Star. You know, what's the, I mean, is it nobody home there as well?
No, it's inundated. I get on, you know, D-Star and the other, I don't frequent DMR hardly at all anymore, but I get on D-Star primarily. That's the mode I think works the best. And then I've had some Fusion work and stuff, but it's inundated. I mean, if you want a conversation, it's there. You just got to call out your call sign. But the thing is, everybody's doing it on hotspots now. So, yeah, there's a local repeater when I'm in town. I got it on a local repeater. When I drive out of town for work and I'm out of the range, I switch to the hotspot. Now I'm transmitting to a little box on my seat, which is connected to the Wi-Fi on my phone, and I'm talking all over the world. But that's what everybody's done, even at home when they're in range of repeaters. They're just using their hotspot. And now the digital repeaters are empty. Nobody's there. And everybody's on these reflectors and on these talk groups and reflectors and rooms and all that. And what bothers me the most is I've heard a couple people say, hey, I just got my license. This is, you know, a couple weeks I've been into this. Why do I even need to upgrade to general? And why do I care about building an antenna? I could work all countries and fill my logbook from my seat in the truck. And I figured, whoa, that's not the way I like that, because I'm not going to bash them. But I feel like that takes away a lot from the hobby when now they don't have to, you know, worry about building an antenna to work HF and all that, because they said, "What? Why do that? I don't even need to worry about my property and where to put an antenna. I just put this thing on the front seat and I work all states and work all countries." And you know, that's what becomes a little bit of a problem. But yeah, there's a ton of activity there.
Well, I guess the other thing too is, if there's nobody on 2 meters, but they're on digital, you know, so that's, and that's primarily up in the 440 band, 770 centimeters, is it not? I mean, that's where the DMR stuff is, I would think. And you have to straighten me out on this, because I haven't operated DMR, or I have not operated at D-Star. Your preference is to D-Star, and why would that be?
It's not like a review. I've gravitated to that. I've used all of them. I'll give you my thoughts on it, and then people can do what they will with the opinion. So it's like this. On D-Star is primarily ICOM with an occasional Kenwood handheld or radio that will do D-Star as well. But let's call it ICOM for example. And you have the same 5, 6, 7, 8 radios on D-Star. You know, I got a 5100, I got a 7100. And then you got a 51A and you got a 4100 and a couple other ones. And then you have the Yaesu System Fusion, and you have their FT2DR, FT1DR, FTM100, FTM400, the same 7 or 6 5 radios. Then you have DMR, and there's about 10,000 manufacturers, and most of them are from China. And I just feel like there's so many different types of radios on DMR and so many hotspots, and they're all coming from a different factory or same factory with different tweaks in them. And it's just it's got a lot, you know, not a real what's the word I'm looking for? There's no real I can't think of the word. It's not as streamlined as D-Star and Fusion is. So I kind of gravitate to D-Star. Whenever you work on somebody on D-Star, they sound good. The system works. The mode works. You can complete a conversation. That's just my opinion. Sometimes you get on a DMR talk group and there's so many people. I'm talking hundreds of people that you can't get a conversation in because they're all pushing the button. And you start a conversation, by the time you say your first sentence and give your call signs, there's 2 other people talking, and they're complaining to that guy because they were there first. And it's just a chaos. So I don't really care for DMR. That's just my opinion. Other people love it. But D-Star, I just like the gear. It's very easy to use. All the radios operate the same, and that's what I've gravitated towards. And it never lets me down. I'm on there every day, and some of the reflectors are quite busy. Some of them are like the 2 meter repeaters. Some of the reflectors have been there 4 or 5 years and you haven't heard a soul on them. I think it is. But all the hotspots are usually UHF. So you're going UHF from your handheld to the hotspot. But the repeaters, it's a mixed bag. You got some VHF and some UHF repeaters on D-Star. Some are always linked to a reflector and they're always busy. Some you have to go there and link it to a reflector. So if nobody does that, it sits there dead.
Dormant. Well, let me ask you this question, because you are the expert at simplifying things. Why don't you give the listeners, especially the ones that have never gotten into the digital stuff, Give them a little explanation as to the difference between DMR and D-Star in terms of operating, I guess I want to say operating procedure, ease of operation, and what's different between the two modes.
That's a great topic there. Well, okay, so D-Star versus DMR, I don't think there's really a comparison there. And again, you have the people that are going to disagree. You think about this. D-Star, you have a lot of different bells and whistles. I'm a bells and whistles kind of guy. Even if I don't use those options, I love to have them. So with a D-Star radio like my 5100, I can put the Bluetooth board in it. I have a touchscreen. I can link my tablet to the radio. I can send pictures over the radio while I'm talking as they're transmitting. The real-time chat, I can open up the app on the ICOM app, tap on a repeater, it goes Bluetooth and sets my radio to the correct offset and everything and frequency of that D-Star repeater based on my location on GPS. You flip it over in a generic term there on DMR, there's really none of that. You have a handheld, you could talk on it, but you know the technology of the digital on DMR, the TDMA, that exists to do all that. But nobody's really doing it. You're just getting in maybe your GPS position on DMR, but there's no real bells and whistles. There's no pictures. There's no apps. There's no Bluetooth. There's no, there is talk groups. There is places to gather to talk to people. It's digital. It's still the same 6.25 kilohertz bandwidth, but you don't have all that crazy stuff, all the extra stuff that you can do with it. And Fusion's the same way with D-Star. You could do picture messaging, you can connect to repeaters and log into somebody's repeater and send your picture into there. You know, hey, it's me waving, and someone else can log into the repeater a month from now, and it's like a server. There's all kinds of voice memos and pictures, and you can link to this repeater and that repeater and do all that. Send pictures right from the microphone on your radio. But so D-Star, I think, is really the most established. It was designed by the Japanese Amateur Radio League for amateur radio, but Fusion and DMR were adopted from commercial platforms back in the day. So DMR was commercialized, and they figured out how to run it in the ham, and Yaesu took the C4FM platform and decided to, you know, mix it in with ham and do it that way. So I think that's really why I think D-Star reigns over all that, because of the way it was developed, by who, and what they're doing with it. And they're always coming out with new features and stuff. And to touch on that further, when you talk about DMR versus D-Star, like you asked, D-Star, you could have five or six of those radios unnamed, and all of them are the same kind of menu structure. I can go pick up a 5100 or a 4100 or a 51A or a 7100 and go right into the menu and know pretty much exactly what I'm doing. It's all got the same stuff there. But if you get a TYT MD380 and you get an Anytone, whatever their DMR model is, or 868, or there's so many different kinds, you can't know one isn't like the other. You know, it's totally different. And then you're asking your buddies, well, I need a code plug. I can't program this radio. So someone sends them a code plug. They put it in their radio, and yeah, they can get on talk groups, but they have no idea how that code plug's built. When their radio dies, they have to go find somebody because they didn't know how to program it. So they just asked because it was so confusing. Some of the DMR radios are a little bit newer and easier to use, but they're all different. And Yaesu is the same way. I can kind of get in there and muddle my way around an FTM-400 or an FT2DR handheld or an FTM-100 and kind of know what I'm doing. Same thing with D-Star. But the DMR, it's all over the place. You know, it depends on what kind of radio you get and how they decided to build it at the factory with their menu structure. Some are very impossible to use.
From what I understand and what I'm hearing, is that the DMR is a bit more difficult to negotiate. I know we picked up, I bought, what, four handhelds?
Yeah.
One for David, one for me, one for Holly, and one for Matthew. And I don't remember what brand they were, but did you ever get one programmed successfully?
Mine was programmed successfully down in Huntsville, Alabama, by someone else. I brought it back home, could not reprogram it for here at home.
Well, I know you don't necessarily need a local repeater for it, but I mean, is there one here? Is there a repeater in this area where in Lebanon we could hit it that is a DMR machine?
Not that I know of.
Okay. I'm wondering about D-Star. I bet there is. I bet there's a couple of repeaters in this area. I don't know, look it up. You've got our finder, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You
know, I do.
Good way to do that. Well, you know, you want ease of operation. I mean, you know, that's the other thing too. I mean, I started talking to people about code plugs. Nobody could even tell me what they were. You know, they're operating DMR and they cannot tell me what a code plug is. I said, well, isn't it just the code that you write to put into the radio to make it do its thing? In other words, is that not what it is? You can't study and learn how to do this? And I don't know. I didn't get anywhere. And as busy as I am, I just dropped the ball. I said, I don't need to be carrying this around.
There's somebody in a chat of mine right now that says, as they're listening, they say, I have an HD1, which is another manufacturer of a DMR handheld, and he says, I've yet to find anyone with a code plug in this area. So he may be having trouble or maybe just doesn't know the repeaters in the area. But, you know, a lot of people, like you said, they don't, not this guy, but a lot of people may not even know what a code plug is. They just know that in order to operate the radio, you got to put one in. And you can get the program and software and cable from the manufacturer most of the time and learn to do it yourself. But again, all of them are structured different. And, you know, some of them, they have meanings from these Chinese radios that we don't even use in ham radio, but DMR was adopted from a commercial market. So you can do two-tone and five-tone and all this kind of stuff and encoding and you know, privatizing and all that, which we don't use. But that, you know, confuses them. And then they look for somebody else to find a code plug, and they just ignore the fact. And I'm not against that. If they want to get on the radio bad enough, fine. Let them get on the radio. But maybe get on the radio and then go back and learn while you got time how to build the code plug instead of frustrating yourself where you don't even want to get on the radio anymore, you know?
Now, are we talking about two- or three-prong code plugs?
Three-prong.
I mean, that's the level that I'm at. You know, I mean, a code plug, well, that's something you plug in. So how many prongs is it? Is it like an octal thing? Or
yeah, which port do I plug the code plug in? The left side or the right side?
Yeah, I don't know. See, that gets a little bit, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that gets a little bit, for somebody that's really techie and can, you know, can maybe even write computer code, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the code plug is something you can create. But the thing of it is, if you move around into a different city, then you've lost it again. You got to have another code plug.
See, and that was the big thing. So on my channel, one of my a couple of my videos, I had the R-Finder DMR smartphones, and they had the app R-Finder puts in the phone. So where as you migrate around or location or change or drive, it pulls a GPS and shows you what repeaters are in your area, and you just click on it, and it sets that code plug per se into the radio. You just push the button on the side. Now, a little bit pricey, you know, some of them were $700+, but that was a great idea. And so then I did hear from another manufacturer that China was trying to do the same thing, and they haven't succeeded yet. But I don't know, maybe they can't get access to a repeater database or whatever, but they were working on it. They called it cloud-based programming, where you can just keep uploading it to the cloud, and then you always have it with the LTE on your phone, because your phone is a radio also. So it would download the code plug from the cloud, whether you change radios or whether you wanted to move around, but they never did that. But that would have been a great thing. It's just not in everybody's price point when you can find an MD380 or 390 at $70, $80 and program it yourself or have someone program it. You know, I mean, someone like me doesn't travel out of the state, so I could fill the memories up and still have plenty left over if I ever went to Tennessee, which I don't plan on going.
I just commissioned David to get up on YouTube and find your videos, because I keep asking, tell me some of the subjects and the things you've covered. But now he's going to be real good at this because he's, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I might have got on the little, you know, I like talking, but I might have missed a question a couple
of
times.
Well, no, and I think a lot of what we're talking about is really relevant. And I think there's a lot of people out there that feel, you know, the same way that we do about a number of different subjects. And, you know, the no activity on 2 meters. I mean, that's one subject.
Well, yeah, let me give you a subject real quick while we're on it, on one of my things on the air on my YouTube channel. And this is a subject for me because I hear this all the time, and this has been about 5 videos already that I've done this. It's kind of like a joke now. when I make a video, I'll title it something like "The Bands Are Dead with 100% Proof." You know, when people click on it, like, wow, you know, like it's a big thing. And a lot of my followers now know that it's sort of a topic for me. You know, a lot of days, yes, we're going into a lower solar cycle, and the bands aren't like they used to be. But I've failed to miss the point that the bands are dead when people are telling me, you know, the 6 meters this summer. I got on, and there was one night I worked 150 stations on 6 meters on an opening, and I recorded some of it and put it on the channel. I said, "Here, check it out. The bands are dead. Look at all these look, I just worked European and South America. The bands are dead." And they get it. Some people don't get it. Some people get it, though, because you got to turn your radio on and call CQ and make an effort. And one guy said, "Well, the bands aren't they are dead. It's not like it used to be. I used to be able to be like shooting fish in a barrel. Now I got to call multiple, you know, I have to call CQ multiple times. That's why it's annoying." Well, I'm sorry, we have to put a little bit of effort into it, but that's some of the videos I posted about a month, 2-3 months ago. I just threw them out there. When I had a good day on 20 meters or 40 meters, I'd say, "Hey, look, the bands are dead. You know, here they are. They're dead." And I'd go through the waterfall and show all the signals and pull a few of them out, make some contacts. And now, you know, my followers on YouTube and Facebook, they'll come on and, "Yep, bands are dead. Just worked 14 DX stations today, 7-3. You know, they get it. You just got to get out there and call, and yeah, it's not as good as it used to be.
Well, here's something strange, and that is I got a Drake TR4CW to play with, and I hooked it up, and I popped it on 15 meters and tuned up the antenna, and I went all over the place. I didn't hear a soul on the band. I didn't even hear any CW signals, nothing. So I parked myself right in the middle of the general class band, and I just started calling CQ, and it was no time. Somebody popped in and started talking to me. Said, "Oh, I just turned the radio on and started tuning around." Well, see, most folks would assume then that 15 meters was out and not usable. But there's nobody home. That's all. Right. Nobody home.
And, you know, and the thing, the thing is, like you just said, I was on 10 meters one time. And it was probably July, August, and it was 8:30 at night. The sun was already set and gone. And I got on 28.405, and I threw a CQ out, and I had an instant pileup. And there was like 9 people. And I said, "Whoa, what's going on here?" They said, "We've all been sitting here waiting for the band to open." I said, "Well, why? You got to get out there and call." So us 9 sat there until 12 midnight on 10 meters with a little round table. We were all just shooting the breeze, passing it around. Couple other people heard it. That band was open till like 2 o'clock that morning. I couldn't believe it. It was wide open. But I put that on YouTube a couple years ago and said, "Look, this is, you know, if you just turn that dial, you're not going to hear anything. If everybody's turning the dial, it's going to be, like you said, no one home. But if everybody's out there calling CQ, you'll be able to see and hear somebody on the band."
Here's a special announcement for those of you who've listened to us tell you about the very cool KAHR shortwave radio. It's a little box that houses a highly sensitive and selective shortwave radio that connects up wirelessly to your KAHR radio and allows you to scan from 1.7 to 30 megahertz using a small key fob that scans the dial on your command so you can keep your eyes on the road. When you hear something you like, you hit the memory button and store up to 100 of your favorites. It's amazing. With a half microvolt sensitivity and DSP processing, it outperforms many of the expensive ham transceivers that you and I normally are listening on. But don't let the small size fool you. This is no toy. But you know, they say many times the best things in life are worth waiting for. And right now, the folks at KAHRShortwaveRadio.com tell us that they're backed up on orders because of a supplier part shortage. But the good news is that they still have a few combo units available, and they hope to be able to resume production very soon and get those really superb shortwave receivers out to the many of you who've been asking about them. In the meantime, check out all the specs. www.KAHRShortwave.com. Then leave a comment in the drop-down box and get your name on the list when these fun radios return to the market. That's KAHRShortwaveRadio.com.
Okay, turn your radio up loud. Have you got it up loud right now? Alexa, play WTWW. Oh, yeah. Listen, let me tell you something. You can listen on Alexa, and that's all you have to do is say, "Alexa, play WTWW. And you have us in your home,
and you don't need a shortwave radio. You don't need a computer, a laptop, or anything. Alexa does a fine job. So join us on Alexa by saying, Alexa, play WTWW. I want to tell you about something that's just absolutely, simply amazing. And you say, what's that? Well, it's the MFJ 939 automatic antenna tuner. And you ask, what's so amazing about it? Well, it's very small, compact unit. It'll handle up to 200 watts. I mean, it'll handle a Drake TR-4, a Swan 350, or any modern radio that's out there. You simply plug the output into the 939 antenna tuner, give it about 5 to 10 watts, and it just tunes. No cable. You don't have to have a cable running between the tuner and the radio. It's utterly fantastic, very quiet. You will love this thing, and it's priced unbelievably low. You need to go to the website, mfjenterprises.com, and check out the 939 antenna tuner, or just Google MFJ 939. Yeah, I noticed that there is some sort of phobia about calling CQ. And I do it. I don't care. I mean, I do it on 2 meters. I get on 2 meters. You know, and these people will come to you and say, well, you know, you're not really, that's just not the way we do it. We don't call CQ on the on the 2 meter band, you know. So, okay, well, you don't do it, but I do. Arrest me.
Yeah.
Please, you know.
Well, that's a video I just did too. That's a good point. Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to bring up videos to answer your question before. I did a video on calling CQ because the newcomer may not know. And what aggravated me a little bit was there was somebody on YouTube, and I never mentioned who it was, but they got on and made a video, and they said, if you're not calling CQ like this, I will not answer you, and you're doing it wrong. And I thought, wow, look at all the people that have seen this video, and it took his advice, and now they're definitely afraid to call CQ. And there really is no page in a license manual that says you have to do it once phonetically, once with just the letters, call CQ 3 times, once phonetically, once letters, call CQ 2 more, and then say you're listening. And he said, if you're doing it, and if you're not doing it this way, you're doing it wrong. And I thought, wow, what a terrible idea, because there's all kinds of people that call CQ different ways. So that's another way I made a video, was how to call CQ for the newcomer or somebody that's just never been on HF in their 50-year career of ham radio. And they loved it.
Well, I don't even think about it. When I get on and call CQ, I never do it twice the same way. I don't think exactly, but who cares? I mean, the person on the other end hears you calling CQ, and he comes back to you. I mean, who cares? See, this is what I mean. I mean, what do I have to have? A 3x5 card that I hold up that says, okay, you know, you do this, okay? I hold that 3x5 card up there, and by God, I'm going to follow this format.
Don't forget your stopwatch to know when you need to give the call sign.
My God, you know, I mean, I don't know. Can we find these people and stuff socks in their mouth? I mean, I think we ought to create the sock award, all right? And somebody wins the sock award, and the sock is intended to stuff right in their mouth, and then put like a head strap around them so they cannot open their mouth and they can't utter a word. You know, I think that's it. What do you think?
You know what I like doing? I like picking out the person that sounds like they're reading CQ off a card, because I know they're a new person, and I will dig through a pileup to get that person to just talk. And I'll stop the contest. I'll stop if I'm contesting. I will stop trying to take contact, and I will talk and make him feel comfortable. Oh, it sounded good. Tell me what kind of radio you're on. And you can feel him warm up right away. But I've heard other people, and they're either nervous about calling CQ, or maybe they haven't been, you know, just given some pointers, not really teaching them, but giving them some pointers. And I look for those people when I'm hearing, and I try to get them. And that's more rewarding for me than it is with the big gun contest that's, you know, leaving out half of the message just because he wants to get in there. You know, that's just me.
Well, yeah, I think that the more complex, once again, we're getting back to this thing, the more complicated somebody tries to make the fraternity or hobby of ham radio, the more, I guess I want to say, the more complex
you know, that they try to make it, then I think we're messed up. We're definitely messed up at that point. And
if you're right, I mean, if it's too complicated, then it will run people away. But, you know, right back to again, with CQ, I was explaining it to my son. He was like, well, how do you call CQ? And I was like, listen, here's what you do. You know, you're given your name. You can do it phonetically. You can tell where you're at. But here's what you got to think about. Someone is scanning. Someone is scanning from this side of the band to this side of the band. How long does it take to get from there to there? You know, so you want to get the person that's tuning around. So, you know, make it wrong. You know, you can do whatever you want to. But, you know, once I explained it to him that way, he was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense, you know, because if somebody is there, if they're just, you know, going by and you give a quick call, they're not going to see you. Or, you know.
Right. And in my video, I wasn't saying that I didn't draw it out and tell them there's an order. I just mentioned those kind of things. You know, you got to remember someone's tuning around. And I just said, you know, I keep my stuff long so that, you know, a lot of people nowadays have waterfalls on their radio, and that's what they're focusing on. They're not listening for stations that may be an S0 that they can't see but they can hear, and they're just looking for a line on the waterfall. So I try to make the line show up. CQ, 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 and I try to keep that modulation up and keep it going on that waterfall so they can see me instead of CQ, KJ4YZI. You know, like you said, they go scrolling by that thing and they're going to miss you.
Oh, yeah. 7-hour trip for me, and I'm in the vehicle. I'm on 5-2, and I'm hollering the whole time, and it's really bad because I'll get pretty much all the way into Dayton or now Xenia, and then that's when I'll find somebody, or I might find another vendor driving along the same route. I'm the kind of guy that if I see an antenna on your car, I'm gonna be like right up next to you, waving my microphone at you, saying hello. You know, but I enjoy doing that, almost a little, maybe a little too much.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you, people need to lighten up, especially on ham radio. I mean, it's just like this incident here that we ran into. What do they got? 5 members of ARES here in town?
Yeah, something like that.
Six members, you know.
Pitiful.
It is pitiful. You know, it's very pitiful. And yet, it's like this, you know, I got my hands around this thing, and I am not going to let go of it. You know, this is my... this is my ARES, you know, that kind of thing. And I think the key to all of this, though, is a group activity, everybody included, everybody welcome, and the critics can stay home, and keeping it at a simple level. As you advance, though, you know, share the knowledge with other people. It's, I don't know, at least that just seems like the basics to me. David, did you go up on the website like I asked
mm-hmm.
you to do?
Okay. I did.
Okay, because he's not going to tell us. It's a big secret. Tell us about some of the videos that you see up there, some of the subject material that he's...
And again, like I said, he covers quite a bit here. He's got a video up here on a 75-watt dual-band FM mobile, and I do not know how you pronounce that, L-U-I-T-O-N.
Luton, that's an older video, yeah.
Luton, the LT-598, you know, and he goes from that straight into some MFJ learning Morse code, CW. You know, this is how he learned Morse code. You know, so, I mean, there's videos up here even on the MFJ digital swerve meter, which I've seen that thing in action. That's pretty neat. And then he's also got up here some the ultra-portable PSK-31. A modern ham radio HF digital mode, little modem here. That's a cute looking little sucker.
That thing is cool. That thing is really cool.
Really looks neat. And you know, he also has stuff up here about amateur satellites and you know, how to make the antennas and how to work them and whatnot. He's got a lot of stuff up here, including, you know, again, he was talking about the ICOM D-Star mobile. You know, he's just got a quick review of that beautiful looking radio. That is a nice looking green on that screen. Now, again, going straight into the HF stuff here. He's got the ICOM IC7300 up here, doing a review on it. He's all over the place.
I even have a video that you missed there. I even had my most. You want to know what my most popular video is? And I didn't mention this. Free TV over the air for antenna TV, a big proponent here to antenna TV. And I thought, wow, what a great way to bring a little bit of ham radio and stuff into my past career of cable and satellite TV into people to save money, to learn how these antennas work, how to, you know, connect the stuff in your house, get free HD TV over the air. And when Hurricane Michael hit, I got 50,000 hits in 2 weeks from wow. Florida on that video.
Holy
yeah,
cow.
That thing skyrocketed when Hurricane Michael, yeah, Michael hit Panama City. Everybody, because I had buddies at AT&T, and they said, you know, they said we can't do anything up here. There's not going to be TV for months, and everybody wanted TV. So I made the video in the summer, and people found the video, and I mean, there was like 390 shares a day for a couple days. I mean, a lot of people were sharing that video, and I got some flack in the beginning saying, Eric, you're coming up with videos that don't pertain to me at all. And I got, you know, a few good punches on me in the comment section. Then other people realized, wow, what a practical video. You summed it up. It's more than just TV. You explained the UHF and VHF side of it. You showed how cable, coax and ham radio, coax and TV, the differences in the coax, the differences in what you should and shouldn't do, connectors, amplifiers, signal degradation. I kind of merged it together so I was still on topic with that. But at the same time, everybody can use antenna TV over the air. So right now, that's my most popular watched video of all my videos. But it's slowed down now because the hurricane's over. But that one pulled a good 2 million minutes watched in like a few months. That was the longest watched video and the most watched video. I think I'm getting still about 2,000 hits a week on that, at least now. I was getting about 2,000 or 3,000 hits a day for a couple weeks on that, from Florida, too.
Well, that's interesting. Well, so let me ask you a question. You know, when you we're talking about ham radio now. Now, let's go back to your beginnings, because I always wonder about what makes people tick. You know, what was it that introduced you to the amateur radio hobby, and how did you go about, you know, getting into it?
Okay, so the farthest back I can remember was about 7 years old. My dad would come home. We lived in Fort Lauderdale. He had a CB in the car, and he would come home, and when he's coming in, I would sneak out and go sit in the floorboard of his Escort, and I would get on the CB because we lived by the highway in Fort Lauderdale. There was always people on the CB in 87 or 88, whatever it was. So I would sneak in on the floorboard and just start talking to people, and they would, you know, yell at me or talk to me or whatever, and I'd have fun. So my dad finally busted me one day. He came back out to the car, and there I was touching a CB radio, and he didn't get mad. He said, what are you doing? And the guy was talking to me, and I was like, look, he's talking to me. So about a year later, I asked my dad, hey, I really want a CB for my birthday. And my 10th birthday, he got me a CB radio and brought home a little gel cell battery and a mag mount antenna. And I was in my house at 10 years old. I'd come home from school and sit right down in front of there and listen to those guys, a lot of locals in Florida. And so I would listen and listen. Well, I did that for a few years. And then I met Patrick, KI4LUY, on the radio, CB. He lives down the street from me still. And I borrowed a PL259 from him and talked for a couple years on CB. And I came over one day, and he had his ham ticket. And he said, hey, man, check this out. And he hit the button on the ICOM V8000, and the repeater came back with the tone board, you know, W4. It started reading off the repeater call sign, and that was it. I was like, wow, this thing talks to you. And he's like, yeah, watch this. And he's like, watch this. And he did a phone patch through the repeater with the phone and dialed a phone from the repeater patch. And I thought, oh, that's it. That was history right there. Once he showed me that, he handed me a book, and he said, You got to start studying. And I literally went home and started reading that book after my dishwashing job, whatever I was doing, and got licensed. And it was a big event for me. I went down there, got my license, you know, and came back. And I had my first radio was an HTX 202 Radio Shack handheld, bulletproof. I think it was great. And I had my waited for my call sign, got the call sign, was on the repeaters, and the rest is history. I wanted more. I had to have more. It was addictive. To be able to talk to people and to, you know how this stuff worked. So that was 2004, 2005 that I got licensed. And so, you know, from, I guess, 1989 to 2005, it was CB radio. And then from 2005 to now, it was just the many things, you know, and a lot of it, I don't operate as much as everybody thinks I do. I operate a lot, but I'm more interested in playing with something and then I move on. I got to have this piece. I got to have that little PSK modem that David just talked about, hook it up to my 817 on QRP, and I would play with it and that's it. I would lose interest real quick. So that's why I bounce around, because I always like to keep it new. But I don't operate as much as I do like playing with stuff. I got to play with new stuff. And that's what kept me interesting the most. That's what got it going, was those catalogs were full of all kinds of colored pictures and things that appealed to me, different things, connectors, amplifiers, radios, power supplies, analyzers, and stuff like that. That's what really got me into radio, was playing with all the different things and keeping me interested.
Well, I know your entrance was through Citizens Band. What were some of the radios that you had or that you remember that were popular during the time that you were on Citizens Band?
Oh, good question. So my first radio, well, the one my dad had was a Cobra. I don't remember that one when I was seven. But my first radio was an Audiovox little 23-channel radio from wherever. And then the one after that really got me going was the Cobra 29 LTD Classic, which I have one right here on my desk. I did do some modifications to driver and final section, variable power swing kit, the little annoying five-tone Roger beat board, turbo echo. I don't have a turbo echo in this one. And then, you know, just things like that, the receive, you know, receive diode, you know, modification, all that. So the thing was really big ears. It heard everything, including all the noise. So I think it pushed, you know, bird watts, I don't know, 15, 20 watts maybe. But, you know, it's definitely a loud radio. And so
I want to know about this, because this is something I do not know about. What in the world is this business? You know, and I've never ran into it in ham radio, and I was in Citizens Band when I was younger. Never ran into any of this. What in the world is this business of swing? They say it swings to whatever. You know, I mean, what in the world is that?
I mean, I don't know where that really came from. To be honest with you, I'd rather have a solid, you know, solid signal on that meter. But they got to have that swing, you know, dead key half a watt swing to 500. And then they see that thing swinging up and down. And if you weren't swinging, you were, I guess you were a loser. You didn't have a good radio, you know, because you were stuck at S7 on that meter, or 7 pounds, as they used to call it. And that was, you know, where you were at. Oh, he's not swinging. You got backward swing. You didn't have enough power driving the radio, or you had it turned down wrong or something. But, you know, it's all really in this radio. It's really a capacitor and resistor over in the driver section, and you turn the RF gain or the variable power down, and the thing will dead key a half a watt, you know, at or wherever you want it to, and then it'll swing up to 10, 15 watts. But you put that into a little, you know, Texas Star, that's a 15-watt drive, and so you're dead keying half a watt, swinging in 3, 4, 500 watts, and I guess it's a, I don't know, maybe it's like a sideband wannabe on AM, I don't know, but.
I wondered, because I remember when I was much younger, these guys would tune their amplifiers up and whatnot, and they'd come over and say, well, this thing's got backward modulation. And I would say, well, there's no such thing. You know, you're tuned to the point where you're exceeding the ability of the power supply. So the minute you talk, the power is going to drop, you know, and, you know, I don't know. I had a rough time trying to explain stuff like that to people. They were just, but they get all concerned. It was later though, later, early on, no one even thought about it. Nobody ever tuned up a CB radio looking at a watt meter going, hello, 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 you know, and saying, oh, I got backward modulation. You know, this just didn't happen. They didn't care. You know, they didn't, it just didn't register with them. So anyways, I thought it was kind of funny. I've heard people talk about, and I see it, look at an ad in a magazine, will say it'll swing to 300 watts or something. It's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, and really, I don't really care. I just wanted to do it because that was the thing to do, put a swing kit in and, you know, do this and do that, and put the IRF 520 finals in there and upgrade the drivers so that, you know, you're not 4-watt radio. You're, you know, swinging to 15 or 20 or whatever. It was a thing for me to do. You know, I really didn't look that much into it. But I could tell you what, these guys that are on, you know, referencing this recent video I just did and the one that I got coming, the guys on, they call it Super Bowl VI on Channel 6. Those guys got those brown and golden eagles, and they got the big old-time radios that I never really got to play with, and they're not swinging. They're a solid S9 on my ICOM, and they're just wide audio. They're probably wider than it should be, but they sound real loud. They're not worried about swing. They're not worried about this. they're worried about getting on there and being heard. And I guess, you know, with CB versus ham radio, a little bit of a competition there. But let them have it. Let them do what they want. You know, I mean, it's not hurting anybody on there. Let them do it. That's just my opinion. It's weird me saying that. Yeah, I'm a licensed ham, but I'm telling you to go out and go past the 4 watts. But whatever, it's going to happen. Let them do it. You know.
Well, I'm with you. I don't think it's hurting. It's not hurting anyone. Okay, and really and truly, it's kind of strange because you know, you say that the bands are busy. I think they're busy if you're trying to get the milk out of the cow and you're trying really hard, you're going to get a CUSO. And many, many, many times the bands are open, they're wide open, but there's nobody there, you know. But I guess I want to say I don't think they're hurting anyone, and I think that, you know, we need to learn to, as amateur radio operators, as well as the ARRL, they need to learn how to channel the citizens band operator into ham radio. They need to learn how to do that, and they don't do it. If they do, that's a very poor job. But we should research all this out. I think I don't think it'd take a whole lot of, other than a little common sense, and come up with things to help these guys get a ticket. You know, so they don't feel. See, a lot of CBers feel like they're unclean. You know, they've got leprosy because that's how hams treat them. You know.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, I think that has a whole lot to do with it. You got any?
Yeah, I've had some of the greatest CUSOs with some CBers, you know, because I'm driving down the road with a bunch of. I'm the guy that's got 20 different antennas that don't go to anything on his minivan, but you know, they'll poke at me. They're like, "Whoa, what is that thing?" And then I'll jump on and I'll talk to them, tell them what ham radio is. A lot of fun talking to these guys.
Well, I know on a trip, you get behind a couple of truckers that are in a talkative mood. And you've got something to occupy your time that certainly makes more sense than trying to find somebody in no man's land 2 meters.
And, well, I could tell you on that video, I did mention that on Channel 19, those truck drivers on CB, if you're a traveler, if you're a person that travels on the radio, you need to have a CB in that vehicle. I have one in my work vehicle. I travel a lot, sometimes 400 miles a day just to do a daily task. And when I'm on the interstate, I will know miles before the app or anybody tells me that the road is shut down or that there's a speed trap or whatever. Those guys are on it, man. They know exactly the way to go. If that road's blocked, which way to get off, which way to detour, which way don't to go, how long it's been blocked, how long it's going to be. Like, if they know all that stuff. And I find that a very useful tool. To know, and some of those guys, they're bored too. They want to talk, and some of those guys will sit there and talk with you, and you can have a more fruitful conversation on there than, like you said, on no man's land on Simplex and 2 meters. That's just the way it is.
Well, they want conversation. They want to talk to you know, the human side of an individual. They're not interested in talking about technical stuff. I mean, they are in trying to snow you and prove what they know. They're not driven by that. You know, they just want to talk, just want conversation. And I'm not going to say that's missing on ham radio because I hear it on HF. But the other thing, too, I think folks have just lost the ability of conversation. It just isn't there anymore. They don't know how to do it. They don't know how to make it happen. And I think a lot of them are just not motivated. You know, they don't really want to know. Like, for example, when I get on, I start asking all kind of questions. You know, what do you do for a living, and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and tell me about your family and all that. I mean, that's me. But there's a lot of folks that get on ham radio that they don't care. I don't care about your family. I don't want to hear about it. I want to talk about, you know, a grounded grid 3CX 1000A7. I want to talk about that grounded grid circuit. in this amplifier here. I don't want to talk about your family or hear anything about your jobs. I've noticed there's an awful lot of that. Or they want to talk about the local club and the emergency activities and the emergency net, and everything is an emergency, you know.
Well, I think that I understand what you're saying completely, and I think that that's what adds a little bit of the value to all the bands we have, because you could be all over the place. You could talk to the guy that wants to rag. I mean, I've heard a lot of technical conversations down in 80 meters and 40 meters that when I tune on and they're talking about grounded grid and all that, and I can't fit in, I just scroll on, because that I may not know what they're talking about. But there are some really guys like yourself and that did a lot of that stuff back in the day that would fit in and have a whole rag shoe. So I guess to me that adds value, that there's whatever you want on radio. If you want to talk about the weather, if you want to talk about the, you know, politics, if you want to talk about radio, if you want to know, there may be, a person on a certain, I mean, I like to think that 75 and 80 meters gravitates towards a lot of those guys, but that may be stereotypical. I just think that down there is a lot of people that talk about that kind of stuff or older radio tube stuff that I can't fit into. Some guys don't want to talk about that. Some guys will sit there till 3 a.m. and talk about it. Some guys want to just hit and run. Some guys want to make contacts. Some guys want to sit and meet new people to know where they're going on vacation, to know somebody in Texas when they get there. I just like that value of ham radio, that you can find anything that you want to talk about. That's my opinion.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're about out of time. I want you to tell folks where they can find your videos, how to get to your videos and watch them. I think that's of course, you know, if they're searching under a subject title, they're going to find them. But, you know, but they'll find a lot of other stuff, too. But how do we find your videos? How do we go up there and watch these things?
Well, the most notably on YouTube.com, if you just type in Ham Radio Concepts, all one word, you'll find my channel. It's usually got the orange logo with the HRC in the middle. I'm also on Facebook. If you just type in Ham Radio Concepts on Facebook. My website is under construction. I finally got someone to help me with that, so that should be live. I hope to have a lot of stuff on the website that I can reference to blogs or technical articles, so I don't have to leave people in the dust and say, hey, you know, go to the website and you can find more detailed information. But really, Google or YouTube, you just type in Ham Radio Concepts, all one word, you're going to find it on YouTube.
Ham Radio Concepts, just type that in, and all of his videos are going to come up. And you may want to go on a binge, you know. You know, people get with television sets and they, some series like Law and Order or something that's all up there, they go binge watching, you know. So you may want to binge watch on these and learn all about all these different subjects. We've been talking to Eric Hoffer, and his call sign is KJ4YZI. And what he does is Ham Radio Concepts. Ham Radio Concepts. So we're going to have him back at some point in time here, hopefully very soon, and have some fun talking about things, you know, certain things. we won't be on the curmudgeon warpath. We'll be talking about something. Is there? Let me just say this, David. Have you got any?
No, I just wanted to say thank you very much for coming on with us, and I'm gonna binge watch some more of your videos. I know I've run across you in the past, and good stuff up there, man.
Well, it sounds like it. I'm gonna have to do the same thing, you know, because you guys are younger than I am, so y'all are into all this newer technology. I'm just one of these old curmudgeons, you know.
Well, you're one of the nicer ones then.
Well, listen, Eric, I really appreciate you coming on with us. And I want to invite people again, you know, jot this down. And we'll have this show up on the website and in the form of a podcast just in a short time, within a day or two. Well, anyways, remember Ham Radio Concepts. Ham Radio Concepts. And always, if you're like I am, you'll hear this and then 2 days later, you'll say, what in the world did they call that again? You know, but you should be able to go to our website and find this this program, and then from that you would have a link or something to get to that, because I think it's really cool. I think I you got the perfect solution for people getting into ham radio, and that is to make it really simple and to the point. And yet, I noticed when you did the octopus video, you had a little humor in there, here and there. I noticed, you know, you'd make a comment here. You weren't exactly, you didn't have a starched shirt on, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So, but, well, at least on that cowboy video, you could see the condition of me using that antenna on 10 meters. I worked more DX on that day than I had the whole month. So it's out there. They just got to get on the air and get on the bands. I've been preaching it for a while. Get on the air and call CQ.
Well, I appreciate your company, sir. And like I said, we're going to have you back again, like, real soon. So you have a good rest of the day, and hopefully we'll meet up again here within a little while.
Yeah, well, guys, thank you so much for having me. It was a very big pleasure to have me on here. So thank you very much, and I will come back whenever you have time and would like to deal with me again. I will be here.
All right. Thank you much.